back to the afternoon session on October 30th of the Portland City Council. Would you please call the roll, Sue?
Novick.
Here.
Fritz.
Here.
Fish.
Here.
Salzman. Hales.
Here. Welcome, everybody. We have what appear to be three items on the calendar this afternoon, but actually we're postponing two of them, 11:28 and 11:29, to November 20th of this year at 2 o'clock. So hopefully no one came here today for the land use case, but it is
and
being...
Mayor, that would be for tomorrow, Thursday. So today is
Sorry. Yeah. I am getting way ahead of myself. Never mind. Yes, we have a single item on the Wednesday afternoon calendar, which is 11:26. And this time I was wearing my glasses, so I have no excuse whatsoever. Would you please read item 11:26?
11:26, consider candidates for independent monitoring of city's compliance with Department of Justice settlement agreement.
Thank you. So this is an important part of our process of compliance with the Department of Justice's agreement with the City of Portland. It's a unique agreement. It's a collaborative one in which we have willingly agreed to make major changes in how we operate as a city, and we're in the process of implementing that agreement. This is a selection process for an important role, the compliance officer community liaison role. A large, complex set of tasks are associated with this COCL role. And this is our opportunity to hear from community members who have thoughts about this selection. There are auditing and surveying and analysis responsibilities that go with this position that are essential to determining the level and the quality of our implementation of the Department of Justice settlement. And the compliance officer needs to be looking at the effectiveness of these many changes that we're making to police policies and practices, and to continue the continually dialogue with the community about the success of our interaction between the police bureau and the community. When you look at the community engagement responsibilities of the community liaison portion of this dual role, this COCL needs to support the Community Oversight Advisory Board, needs to assist in design and evaluation of community engagement and outreach plans, and needs to, again, solicit community input and review of policies, procedures, and practices in the police bureau. So it's a very important and multifaceted role that this COCL position requires. We are going to hear from staff today and then, again, hear from the community. And the goal, again, is to have a continuously improving community-evaluated police organization that has a high level of trust and legitimacy in every part of the city and for every one of our citizens. That's the goal, and that's what this position is designed to help us reach. So with that, I want to call on Joe Wall, Ellen Osenak, and Dave Wobrell to come up and walk us through where we are in the selection process, where this fits into the Department of Justice agreement, what the specific requirements are for the COCL, and anything else that you want the council and the community to keep in mind while we take these comments and suggestions about this selection.
Thank you, Mayor Hales, members of the City Council. My name is Ellen Osenak. I'm a deputy city attorney in your city attorney's office and one of the lead attorneys for our settlement agreement with the Department of Justice. I just wanted to give you a brief overview to put in context the testimony that you'll hear from Joe Wall and David Wobrell. As you know, the agreement was approved by the court on August 28th of this year, and that date triggers a number of other requirements in the settlement agreement, things that we must do within a certain time period. And one of those relates to the COCL, or the compliance officer. And that is that within 60 days of the effective date of the agreement, we needed to have publicly identified three candidates with expertise in police practices, crisis intervention methods, and community engagement. We identified those three candidates over a month ago, so we're well within the agreement's deadlines. And the agreement also requires us to have a 30-day public comment period. And so the purpose of today's report before you is for you to receive information from the public and staff about how we developed this selection process that identified the three candidates, what are some of the detailed requirements and responsibilities for the COCL role, and then to hear from the public any feedback that they might want to give you about what they would like to see the COCL do. I want to stress today for everyone that this is not, the purpose of today's hearing is not for council to identify the candidate that you all might prefer. It's simply for you all to receive additional information so that you can make your decision. So there won't be a decision made here today. That's going to come at a later date. This is just for everyone to get better informed about both the candidates and the COCL position. So Joe Wall from the Office of Equity and Human Rights will give you a detailed history about how we got to the selection process and how the community was involved in that. And then Senior City Attorney David Wobrow will give you some detailed information about the requirements that are in the agreement. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mayor, Council members. My name is Joseph Wall, and I'm the Deputy Director for the City's Office of Equity and Human Rights. And just to kind of reiterate again to some of Ellen's comments here that today we'll be kind of presenting the background and history of our process today, and then we'll open up for the floor for public comment. I want to start with our planning committee. This process really began almost probably more than a year ago, actually a year and a half towards the summer of 2013 as the settlement agreement was being developed and agreed upon. So I came on board to basically help facilitate this process, and planning for the selection process of the COCL began during that period of time. As part of this response, a coordinating committee was brought together by Commissioner Fritz to review the DOJ settlement agreement as well as to begin developing a process for the selection of the COCL, who would oversee the city's implementation of the settlement agreement. This planning committee would include city staff, community members connected to stakeholder organizations, and individuals with lived mental health experience. And included in this representative group were members of commissioners and auditors' offices, the Office of Equity and Human Rights, the City Attorney's Office, Portland Police Bureau, Albina Ministerial Alliance for Police Justice and Reform, Mental Health Association of Portland, the Portland Commission on Disabilities, and community members with lived experience.
But just a slight correction, some of those groups only came in right at the end. I want to make that clear.
Absolutely. Thank you, Commissioner Fritz. Through this planning process, an application process and form were developed. This group helped to craft that, and it was eventually crafted into what we called an invitation to submit a letter of interest. Since this was not an employment situation and it was not a traditional contract situation, we decided upon this, so it became this letter of invitation to submit a letter of interest, which was used for the position announcement, and a copy of that you have in your packet. Outreach, the invitation to submit letters of interest was posted on the mayor's website as well as the city's main webpage and the Bureau of Human Resources webpage. It was also distributed to community organizations who were asked to help distribute the announcement. And this was both local, regional, as well as national in some cases. It was also sent to many local, regional, and national organizations which had familiarity with police reform work, interactions between police and mental health organizations, and others. And a list of those organizations are also included in your packet. The application and review process consisted of initially 12 people applied for the position in January, and basically, I assisted with the coordination of the assessment along with Ellen Osneck from the city attorney's office and others from city staff. And then two separate panels of reviewers, including community members with experience in mental health care services, law enforcement, the Albina Ministerial Alliance Coalition for Justice and Police Reform, and city staff, chose the three candidates to be interviewed. And this was after two different screening processes that were concluded. The DOJ settlement requires the city to, as Ellen had mentioned, to identify a list of three potential candidates for public review from which the city council will select one. The candidates made public presentations and participated in public interviews on Monday, September 29th. The interview panels included community members representing a broad range of organizations, including, as we mentioned, the Albina Ministerial Alliance Coalition for Justice and Police Reform, and advocates for people experiencing mental illness. The initial presentations by the candidates were broadcast on Channel 30 via Portland Community Media, and the video has been posted on the mayor's website in the DOJ feedback tab. A list of this selection advisory committee members is included in these council document filings, along with the facilitator's summary of feedback received from the selection advisory committee. Following the public presentations on September 29th, the City Council also interviewed each of the candidates. And then in accordance with the settlement agreement, following the identification of the three candidates, a 30-day public comment period began, and comment will continue to be taken throughout this evening. Additional details are available on the mayor's website in the DOJ feedback tab. And then the council will vote next Wednesday, November 5th, on which candidate to enter into a contract negotiations with, and that will be facilitated by the city attorney's office. The three candidates, I've been neglecting my PowerPoint duties, so apologize.
What's that?
It was actually refreshing. Not
going to like me.
And this is the just a web a snapshot of the mayor's website there. So we'll begin with a brief on each of the three candidates for review. John Campbell, who's also here today, of Campbell DeLong Resources Incorporated, is a Portland firm that since 1989 has provided research, training, facilitation, and planning for the purposes of public safety problem solving, community-oriented policing, and the goal of more effective law enforcement results. And John, I know, is with us today. Next candidate is Dennis Rosenbaum. Dennis is the executive director of the National Police Research Platform and evaluator of police organizations, police management, and community police relations. He has pioneered ways to measure police-citizen interactions and procedural justice, as well as new approaches to police training. And the final candidate is Daniel Ward, who is the executive director of the Oregon Drug and Alcohol Policy Commission. Thanks. He is also the former CEO of Metro Crisis Services Incorporated in Colorado, which manages a mental health crisis line and referral services. And he's had years of experience working with police and community on development of crisis intervention processes and programs. So if folks are interested in learning more about the candidates, their original applications are available also on the mayor's website. In addition, following the public presentations and interviews on September 29th, each candidate has submitted detailed supplemental information in response to feedback and comments regarding the candidates' perceived strengths and weaknesses as reported by the advisory committee. All of this information can be found on the mayor's website, which you see up above on the PowerPoint slide. And I'll now turn it over to Dave.
Actually, and I just want to interject. I believe Mr. Campbell is here today, but I want to make it clear that none of the candidates are going to be making presentations to you here today. They did that in the public and the community interviews. And I particularly wanted to make that clear because Daniel Ward had, and I believe he's listening here today, he said he'd be watching. I think actually Dr. Rosenbaum will be as well. But they didn't want their absence in the chambers today to indicate any sort of lack of enthusiasm or interest. And so I wanted to make that clear to council and the public today.
Thank you. Okay, David.
Good afternoon, Mayor, Commissioners. I'm David Wolver from the City Attorney's Office. I've been asked to give you a sense of the scope and breadth and depth of the COCAL job. It's impossible, given the energy and time available to us in this forum, to do that very precisely. What I'm going to provide you here is a pretty rough measuring stick by which to compare the candidates and get a sense of the skills necessary and the capabilities necessary to do the job. We created a very complex job in the settlement agreement. I think I can only give you a sense of that and not a complete picture today. My apologies to Commissioner Saltzman. I can only think of this of doing this through a PowerPoint. So here we go. You see, the headings here are the categories into which I have divided the COCAL's responsibilities: compliance, outcome assessments, engagement with the community, and reports. I'm going to start with compliance. Most of the paragraphs in the agreement that the COCAL has to deal with have to do with compliance monitoring. and there are very many of them. Force policy, there are requirements. They are not all equal. In a few moments, I'm going to put up the total number of paragraphs that have to do with compliance. It's quite massive. Not all paragraphs are created equal. Try to give you some sense of some of the more important paragraphs here. The force policy, for instance, paragraph 66 requires that Portland maintain the Graham standard. We don't have time to read all of these bullets, but you can, I hope you take a sense from following slides, the detail into which the instructions from DOJ and the settlement agreement, the level of detail to which they go. And here are some more requirements that the COCO will have to determine whether or not Portland has satisfied these requirements. As far as TASER, another sampling, and again, these are just a few of the paragraphs in the settlement agreement, a sense of the granularity to which the settlement agreement goes and the level to which the COCO is going to have to dig and monitor. Training is a major section of the settlement agreement. There are many compliance requirements that have to do with training. There's a needs assessment. The COCO is going to have to ride herd on the training division as it develops a needs assessment and then creates mechanisms and tools to gather information and then analyze the needs of the Portland Police Bureau as far as training goes. These are some of the elements that the settlement agreement requires the city to consider in developing a needs assessment. And of course, the COCO will have to determine whether or not we have included these kinds of elements in the needs assessment. Again, very, very particular targets of the effort. Training, the training division of the Portland Police Bureau is required to come up with a training plan. And also, it has to determine whether its training has been effective. The COCO gets to determine, and you are essentially hiring the COCO to tell you whether or not the training division successfully measured effectiveness. And then, of course, deal with whatever the conclusions are, whether it's effective or ineffective, the training. This is some of the language in the settlement agreement that the COCO will look to when determining whether or not Portland has complied in auditing the effectiveness of training. And again, some more targets. The settlement agreement requires that the training division delivers training on certain subject matter. There's an extensive list of that. It's relatively easy, I think, for the COCO to determine if that's been delivered. More difficult for the COCO to determine if it's been delivered well and effectively. And here are some of the subject matter that the training division is required to deliver, and the COCO is required to confirm the training division has delivered. The COCO will have a very intense relationship with the inspector position in the Portland Police Bureau. The inspector position has existed for some years. It is developing and evolving rapidly as a result of the settlement process. The COCO is required, actually the settlement requires the inspector to consult with the COCO on many matters. Inspector is kind of at the middle of the web of force policy, force evaluation, force assessment, review and discipline processes. The COCO, the way the settlement agreement functions, will actually work with the inspector to develop various assessment mechanisms, various data collection systems, and various analyses of performance. The COCO and the inspector together will audit the force reports. There's a process in the Police Bureau now called the 940 process by which officers report use of force. Those will be audited by the inspector and by the COCO. And here is some of the language that requires the COCO and the inspector of the city to look at these subjects when auditing force reports. Again, we don't have time to read all of these, but you might pick one out and just see the level of specificity contained in the settlement agreement. The bottom element is not easy work and requires significant expertise in enforce police use of force to determine if officers have in fact picked options reasonably calculated to maintain control with the least amount of appropriate force. And again, some requirements that the auditors, the COCL and the inspector have to comply with as they go through taser force reports. And again, no time to read all of these, but pick one out. And again, it should give you a sense of the level of detail we're asking this person to operate at. The audit, the 940 system is new to us. It was one of the benefits of calling DOJ to town. Their consultant came in and brought us up to speed with the national standards for review of force events. We call that the 940 system. The settlement agreement requires us to build upon the 940 system we have in place and to ensure that it's functioning properly. A lot of tasks. Here's some of the tasks required of the COCL and the inspector as they monitor the 940 system. And again, more and more specific requirements for the COCL. There's a quarterly force analysis the inspector does. The COCL will be involved with that. The crisis intervention system is a subject for COCL compliance assessment. The crisis intervention and the behavioral health unit data collection system is something that the COCL needs to look at and certify as capable according to the very specifications in the settlement agreement. And here are some of the requirements for that data system that the COCL needs to look at. So there's, for crisis intervention, there's both collection of data and data use. The COCL has responsibilities in telling you, the council, whether or not the data is being used properly to improve performance of officers out on the street. And here's some language from the settlement agreement that points the COCL at, provides a goal for the COCL. Outcomes, there's a requirement that crisis intervention efforts in Portland be assessed for outcomes. And here's some language about tracking outcome data. The idea is to feed back the data to identify training needs and also to judge performance of officers in these events. There's a mobile crisis team that the COCL is going to have to look at and assess. There are BOEC, Bureau of Emergency Communication protocols in the settlement agreement that the COCL must certify city compliance with the settlement agreement's terms. The employee information system is a relatively new technology across the country. It's developing. The COCL will be involved in our development, continued development of the employee information system. It's a computer system that draws together various databases to inform police managers about the performance of employees. Spot trends that are troublesome, spot trends that are good. Through the EIS, we know much more about how officers are performing and interacting with the community. The COCL will be intensely involved in the development of that system, approving development along the way, as well as evaluating it for you. There are administrative investigation timelines were a critical part of the settlement agreement, and the COCL will bird dog both Portland Police Bureau and IPR and the CRC compliance with those new timelines. And the settlement agreement also has some language about the COCL assessing compliance with a goal to have more on-scene statements, particularly in officer-involved shootings. There's no precise job duty in this regard. It's a development. There will be development of on-scene statement policy in the future, and the COCL will be involved. IPR and CRC processes are also subjects of the settlement agreement. This is a listing of the number of paragraphs that have to do with each of these subjects to give you some sense of how many boxes the COCL is going to need to check just in this first compliance column. And again, not all of these paragraphs are the same. Some will involve a tremendous amount of work. The Bureau has already accomplished some of these things, and I think they'll be easy checkoffs, just to give you some sense of the scope of the work. outcome assessments. The COCO is responsible for a semi-annual outcome assessment in various areas, whether or not the city has developed capable crisis systems, competent oversight systems, and effective training. I've just blown through those in 15 seconds. This is a huge job. You need someone who can figure out how to competently assess the performance of these systems in a very in a multivariate environment. Not an easy task. You want this information very badly. You need someone expert in gathering it for you. So the fact that I'm handling this quite quickly shouldn't cause you to wait this requirement lightly. And then proper force management. COCO has significant community engagement responsibilities, chairs the COAB, the COAB. That's really
define
about...
Define the COAB?
Well, the COAB is...
Community Oversight.
Community Oversight Advisory Board. An important part of... It's very important to DOJ and the city that we had proper engagement with the public. The settlement agreement doesn't talk much about the COCO's role with the COAB except to say that the COCO is the chair of the COAB. So what I've done is I've listed out the functions of the COAB. Here's the list. I'll quickly go through this and just put them up on the PowerPoint to give you some sense of the, I guess, the idea development that the COCO is going to have to preside over. I'm going to have to facilitate the COAB's work in being an independent assessor of city performance under the settlement agreement. The COCO is required to take recommendations from the COAB. The COAB is authorized to give advice on community relations to you, to the chief, to the city, basically, and to the COCO. It's also required to provide information from the city to the public. So the COAB is a two-way street, and the COCO is going to have to manage that so that it works properly. And the COAB is required to contribute to the community engagement, I think it's community engagement plan that will be developed over the next couple of years. This will be should be a sophisticated plan, which is going to require quite a bit of thinking and interaction among a lot of different stakeholders and interested and expert parties. The COCO is going to have to help you all coordinate that. And, of course, take public input. The COCO then also is required to run quarterly town meetings, town hall meetings. Reports, quarterly reports on compliance as to each paragraph in the agreement. One of the reasons I put up all of, put the numbers for the paragraphs. The COCO every quarter will be telling you how the city's doing on each of the paragraphs that have a compliance requirement. And we'll recommend, we'll make recommendations. Part of the report, the COCO is expected because the COCO will be deep in the city's business to help you with recommendations on how to succeed in implementing the settlement agreement. There it is. I take questions. I know I've skimmed over the surface. I hope I've given you some sense of the scope of the job. Mm-hmm. It's tremendous, and it requires a number of different skills.
That's a good summary of the scope, David. Thank you.
And there's also the COCO provides yearly updates to Judge Simon. Is that correct?
Remains to be seen, but yes. Under the current state of affairs, yes, the COCO would be going in to talk to Judge Simon once a year. And that's an uncertainty we have in defining the job. We don't know what that would look like.
Okay. Other questions for any of our resource team here? Great. Well, thank you all. We'll probably have other questions as we go forward, but let's call on those who've signed up to speak on this item.
We have three people signed up: Mary Ng, Ben Pickering, and Sally Cohen. Cohen. John? Go on up. Yeah, it's fine.
Welcome.
Good morning, Council. I wanted to thank you personally for your public service. And while we may not always agree on everything, I want to thank you because it's a lot of energy and commitment, and I bet you're as exhausted as I was last Wednesday on a regular basis. I had two main points regarding the COCO. thing, which are that the candidates appear to be too white and too male. And it doesn't seem that we are expressing a commitment to diversity or to gender balance. It's clear that we're in non-compliance already because of the appeal. So gaining this compliance officer is already fraught with tension, in my opinion. One thing I wanted to bring up is anecdotally about the police conduct. Since the settlement happened, Joe Blow officer, who you might be able to talk about anything with on the streets, just chitter-chatter, now has this protocol to say, are you mentally ill? And this are you mentally ill interrogation, I think, is their way of trying to express that they are aware there's a settlement, they want to come into compliance, but it's very socially gauche. So we need to work on some conversational street dialogue skills with the officers, because their kind of interrogation, it comes off as sort of like a mental illness inquisition when they do this kind of chit-chat. Another thing, let's see. Well, my mom said something really nice at the DOJ hearing with Judge Simon, and she was saying that throwing the $26 million at this and building more bureaucracy to deal with our already dysfunctional bureaucracy may add more tension. She actually used a very offensive metaphor about banging our heads against a wall, and that increasing the bureaucracy may not actually get to something. Along the lines with the lack of women and diverse candidates, I wanted to say that even Mitt Romney had binders full of women. And that hashtag binders full of women became a wonderful meme. And I think we need some binders full of women, as well as diverse candidates who represent the people who will be looking to this community liaison to be able to reach out to them without having any trigger and with maybe even a diverse body. Maybe there's some compromise we can come up with Simon to have a panel or a group of diverse people that we could feel that we could reach out to. Well, I've got 30 seconds. Okay, so the sexual harassment of Rachel Andrew. Basically, Chief Reese threw her up.
Let's stick with the Coco. Because we have a choice to make here.
If you're going to induce PTSD in your own officers, sir, by sexually harassing them.
We're here to talk about the selection process, Mary, not about history.
Well, you need to deal with this kind of behavior.
We need a loyalty oath.
We need a loyalty oath in the PPB, because if we have these neo-Nazis in our force, to me, that's very un-American, and we need to get with that.
All right, thank you.
So, Mary, the two of the candidates do have a diverse group of folks working with them. Have you been able to look at that?
I did look at some of the video, yes.
And so do you have any feedback on the three options?
There's one. We're all humans, so we're all prejudicial. We can have like a gut instinct, like I like this guy's facial hair or I like his shaved face or something when you're looking at three white guys in a row. I would say Daniel Ward's demeanor was very, I don't know, he seemed like a sensitive guy that I could get to know, and I liked his background being more medical. I just had a very nice conversation with Campbell, and he seems incredibly sensitive and attuned to the problems at hand. And some of the incidents we spoke with him about, I immediately feel that we evinced a gut-wrenching feeling that he has a heart for this, and he's aware of the layers of obstruction and concealment that are going on with IPR's lack of subpoena power and the police union's lockstepism. And then, so as for the Rosenbaum, I was very concerned about the Chicago history of torture, and that's a big issue there. And whether or not he was a part of the change of in Chicago, I think there was some concern on the Mental Health Association that his absence and running it from a remote location would just make him extra detached. And so I kind of viewed that as like he's not really a contender because he's not here.
Thank you. That's very helpful.
Thank you. Benjamin H. Pickering. Wibble Wool. Yeah. He had some good things over there. He was talking about training wheels. I mean, they said they need a lot of training. That's one of the things he said the cops need. I don't know, because I when he says that, I got in my mind, I was thinking training wheels because, you usually teach people before they You know, they ought to take a book when they and when you're going through classes and you try to get an excellent score to be able to pass the police academy. That should be written in there, and there shouldn't be having to be no training. You go there and you study it, and you go in there and you already know that those basic things. There's no, you know, you go in there and you work hard at achieving things. All this stuff, oh, you got to do this, got to do that, got to work with this, got to do that. What's the cost when they should be knowing this? It should be written down. They should be, you know, on ahead of the schedule. Like, it's not very hard to take something and take a community and I all work together. I mean, I haven't been here that long, been a little bit. But, like, I have this thing in time. Every once in a while, I have to put this thing right here. It's, like, over my arm, my elbow. Well, I have this dent in my hand due to when the cops smashed and grinded my face in the ground. But it's dented in my hand, and I have to have surgery on my elbow. And it puts me under – it buckles me where I just bust out in sweat from what they have done to me and damaged and destroyed – like, took me to – and not only that, they took me to court. And – but, like, a lot of the things that I've been dealing with and seeing and just walking around and listening to these stories and stuff that I pull up on the internet all day long – and, like, I watch this stuff constantly in numerous things, and I hear it through all some of the protesters and all the things that are being written about. And my typist, and Mary, and she reads a lot of stuff to me, but, like, it's not about throwing money at something. It's just about common sense. I mean, that's why I was saying training wheels, because, I mean, you don't need training wheels to train these guys. They're grown men. And women, the people that are on the police force, it's only common sense. I mean, when they give you these guys, there's already someone talking about putting cameras on their vests. I mean, is that going to make a big dent in it in the force where they're going to act good because they have that camera to show off in front of everybody and say, oh, we're the good cops now? And then is it going to vary from being bad cops to good cops way up here? Or, I mean, is it just going to be like vice versa, you know, there's good cops and there's bad cops, but on the other side, there's two
Jen,
sides.
Need you, need
of,
you to wrap up because you're out of time.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Thanks. Go ahead, please.
Sally Jockin. I'm going to preface what I wrote here by saying when I moved here and we were going to buy a house, we had six requirements that this house had to have, and we looked at some that had five, and we didn't take them because we knew there was going to be a house out there that had all six, and we are living in that house. So you'll see why it's related, because I have six things here. But first of all, I'm glad an agreement was reached and hope that reforms being made will ensure that in the future, mentally ill individuals will never lose their lives or be injured when other solutions are possible. The compliance officer, community liaison to oversee the DOJ Portland Police Bureau agreement, I think must have all of these six qualifications. One, a thorough understanding of the agreement. Two, strong knowledge about mental illness and how to deal positively and successfully with individuals in crisis and concern for everyone's safety and peaceful resolutions. Three, a knowledgeable team to work with who reflect the diversity of the city. Four, familiarity with Portland and its various neighborhoods and communities. And five, familiarity with the Portland Police Bureau and how it operates. And six, familiarity with past history of police and community relations, as well as knowledge about recent events that led up to the DOJ lawsuit. I am quite sure that there are individuals who have all six of these qualifications, and if any or all of the three you're considering do, that's great. But if none of the present three candidates does, then I think that City Council should open up the process to search for and recruit a COCL person who will be able to fully accomplish this important job. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That's very helpful.
That's very helpful. Were you able to watch the presentation, Sally?
I haven't watched it, no.
Thank you.
I just read stuff.
Thank you for looking
Thanks.
Into it.
Thank you very much.
I forgot one point, which was that destruction of evidence is not equal to compliance, which if you compare the Cox case and the Pickering case, they went in and had the video evidence destroyed. So that's not compliance.
Well, you know, yeah, what she was saying. Anyway, our time's up, so
We got it. Thank you.
Before you close the hearing, Mayor, I just want to emphasize that the council has not made a decision yet, and today is the last day to provide input. So certainly we would encourage folks in the community watching on television to send in your input right now. If there's anybody else in the audience today who would like to tell the whole council, this is your one opportunity to talk to all five of us at once.
Yeah, please do, if you do want to speak. And then also, I think we're leaving the – what's that?
If I want to say something later, because then you guys –
we're leaving. Going to leave the website open a little longer, I think. We're going to leave the website open until tomorrow morning for further input. So write, get on the internet and give us other comments if you have them. So in addition to anyone else wants the opportunity here today. So looks like other comments before we close.
I have one question for David.
Please come on up, David.
David, on the PowerPoint that you showed us, there's a tremendous amount of reporting that's required, quarterly, annually, and you sort of gave us a flavor of it. Do you have some document that summarizes for us the method of delivery for each of those reports? So distinguishing between when we get a written report versus when there has to be a hearing of some kind or some hybrid?
I can put a summary together for you. Top of my head, most of these are written reports. They're on strict schedules. Timelines are set out very precisely. Perhaps Ellen can help with this. I don't remember a hearing or a public presentation that isn't accompanied by a report. In fact, I know that there's one situation in which a report has to come out before a public presentation of it so that people can review it before that presentation.
So most of the reports that you've identified get released to the public, shared with the council, placed on a website or something, and are not accompanied by a public hearing?
Yes.
Okay. At some point, if you give us a cheat sheet on that, just because there seem like a lot of different reports with different schedules, and it'd be... I think good to sort of tee that up for the calendar year.
Yes, the COCO will be constantly writing a report of one kind or another.
Okay, other questions or requests? So again, the website's open for more comments. Please send them in.
I guess I had a question.
Sure, Dan. Yeah.
David or Ellen or both or Joe? So what kind of reference checks were done on these candidates? I mean, how do we know they are what they say in their resumes?
Commissioner Salton, that's a great question. Actually, as we were sitting here, Joe Wall passed me the letter that we received from the Department of State Police. We had asked them to conduct a fairly cursory criminal background check into the three candidates, and we received a report that none of them had anything that is concerning or of which the council should take note. And we have not yet done a fuller background check asking for references or doing any verification about the information that they provided in their resumes.
But that will happen after? I'm sorry, yeah, so that's the...
I think the answer is we will do it at your direction. I don't think the decision has been made yet when to do sort of a fuller background check.
But we're supposed to make a decision a week from today and not have that information prior to that?
Well, it's not unusual in personnel to make a selection subject to, right? And I assume we're doing the same thing here, is that if we have a majority or a consensus on the council that we want to select this candidate, assuming they check out, and that they are who they say they are and their credentials are what they purported them to be, then I think then our decision stands. But if we conduct that evaluation just like we would in any other personnel issue and it turns out there's some holes in the picture, then I think our instructions should be to the team to return to council and see if we want to exercise another option. That makes sense? So... That's the normal process for hiring an individual employee. So we make the offer, and then we find out if there's any problem.
And who will do that employment verification? Will that be Joe or Ellen, David?
I think those are good questions. I think we don't have concrete answers for you. The intent is that What council will do is to authorize the city attorney's office and procurement to enter into negotiations with a candidate that you all identify. And I would think that probably at your direction, as part of that negotiation process, we would do exactly what the mayor just suggested, which is to do a reference check and some of the more traditional background information to give to you all so you can let us know whether or not you want to approve the contract that we negotiate.
Yeah, it seems to me that, you know, we have both experience and independence here in terms of the Office of Equity and Human Rights and the City Attorney's Office, that some combination of the folks that have brought this process this far should carry it forward the rest of the way. And this is essentially a qualifications-based selection. We're saying this person or this team seems best qualified. Now go verify those assertions that led us to that decision. So I think this is, I'm glad you raised that, but we will want to make those instructions, I think, pretty explicit to this team when we act.
Thank you.
One of the reasons that we asked the state police to do those was exactly for that reason.
Yeah,
Mayor Hales,
that's a threshold question. If there was, you know, something that was simply, you know, a deal breaker, never mind, then we'd want to know now. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. Other suggestions, questions, instructions? Okay. Thank you all very much. We are recessed until tomorrow.
So just so you know, everybody, we will be filing a resolution tomorrow to put something on the council agenda for next week. It will be a placeholder. It will not have the name because, obviously, if the public comment doesn't finish until tomorrow morning, we may need a day or two to figure that out. But by protocol, we have to file the resolution by tomorrow evening. So when it comes out and it's published on Friday, you'll see that there's a decision that's going to be made. What will probably happen is that we will have a substitute resolution that will actually name the candidate that will publicize probably on Monday. That's my hope for how this will work. I'm going to be responsible for coordinating between the council. Obviously, as I said, the five of us can only talk together in a public setting, so I will be making the rounds to talk one-on-one with my colleagues and then collaborating with the mayor to decide how we're going to move forward. So just I wanted to put that on the record so that you all know how the decision will be made.
Appreciate that clarification. Yeah, it's not decided until it's decided, but we're going to put the resolution before the council. Again, as I mentioned earlier, erroneously about today, there are two items on the council calendar, 1128 and 1129, originally scheduled for tomorrow. They've been moved to November 20th, so we will be recessed until tomorrow at 2 p.m. and we'll take up item 1127 only. Thank you.
What's 1127?
That's the noise variance.
Oh, right. That's going to be really interesting.
Yeah.
All right.
See you in a little while.
Yes.
Yeah. Different.